Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
From The Times and The Sunday Times, this is The Story. I'm Luke Jones.
So the phone rang. It was 3:15 in the morning in December last year. The person whose phone was ringing was very surprised to get a phone call in the middle of the night. She's a 78-year-old woman. The caller asked her if she was alone. Of course, at 3 in the morning, she was on her own. And the caller said, "I've got in with some bad people and they've got me locked in a flat and they want £5,000 to release me." To which the woman, who I think it was fair to say was pretty surprised by this, replied to say, "I can't get money to you. It's 3:15 in the morning and I can't transfer any money because I can't leave a house." The caller got angry. He said it was a matter of life and death, and he said that he's got to have the money transferred immediately. She said, "I can't do it." He said, "Well, you lend the money to me then." She said she wouldn't, but she said she'd speak to his office manager, someone who's very close to him, in the morning, and that they'd get the situation sorted out.
And who was the person making this strange call?
That caller was Mark Menzies, who is a Conservative MP.
We'll take you inside this exclusive investigation, which has seen the MP at the centre of it lose the whip. The story today: the Conservative MP allegedly misusing campaign cash.
I'm Billy Kemba, and I'm a senior investigations reporter at The Times.
And you've been working on these kind of MP scandals for ages, haven't you?
With investigations, we tend to cover quite a range of stories, but often involving politics. And I went undercover to expose Scott Benton, who stood down as an MP last month and is now a by-election being held in his old constituency. And I've worked on other sort of sleaze stories involving Robert Jenrick and Nadeem Zahawi in the last few years. Mm.
But this particular story that we're going to get into, how did this first come on your radar? When did you first get a whiff of what could have happened?
So I got a tip about this story way back in December, not very long after this phone call had taken place. And since then, it's been the slog to stand it up to the point where we can put it in the paper.
A slog for what reason?
With all investigations, it's a sort of jigsaw exercise in piecing together what has happened, and alongside that, the evidence that corroborates that. And in this story in particular, it's been a kind of long and fairly painstaking process to build up the evidence we needed to be able to publish this story. Mm.
Let's get into who he is then. Mark Menzies, the MP in question, is a Lancashire MP.
So he's been an MP since 2010. He entered politics as one of David Cameron's A-list of preferred candidates and was selected in the safe Conservative seat of Fylde in Lancashire, borders Blackpool. Fylde is a sort of affluent part of Lancashire. It's a very safe Conservative seat. He's got a majority of more than 16,000, and it's been in Conservative hands for decades. And he was sort of being fast-tracked for the top. He was a ministerial aide within a few months of being elected and was climbing the ranks, but that progress was halted in 2014 when he was the subject of a scandal in a Sunday newspaper.
And what did that story detail?
That story was an interview with a 19-year-old Brazilian male escort. It was a guy called Rodrigo Santos. He was said to have met the escort on a gay escort website. And he says Mark gave him a tour around Parliament and paid for sex with him, and that Mark had taken drugs and asked him to buy drugs for Class B drug methadone.
And what did he say of those allegations at the time?
He said he was standing down from his post. He said a number of the allegations were not true and he looked forward to setting the record straight in due course, but nothing followed from that. Mm. And since then, he's been a backbench MP. He sat on a number of all-party parliamentary groups. These are, you know, the vast majority of MPs are backbench MPs. He was appointed by Theresa May as a government trade envoy to, I think, 4 South American countries, and he's continued in that role since then. So he makes occasional visits to those countries, and it's an unpaid role, but he's responsible for improving relations and particularly around trade between the UK and those 4 nations.
Has he kept a low profile since then? As you say, backbench MP, has this envoy job, has had a scrape with a national tabloid in the past. Has he sort of kept his head down largely?
He was at the centre of some truly bizarre allegations a few years later that he had been asked to look after a friend's dog, and that he had deliberately plied that dog with alcohol and left that dog needing veterinary treatment because the dog was drunk. He was questioned by police over that. He said afterwards that he had been completely cleared and that those were false and malicious allegations.
So, Billy, you've taken us through all of this MP's previous scrapes over the last few years, how he was once a sort of bright hope of the party, was on that first rung of a government career, but that all came tumbling down after those revelations in 2014, which brings us to your main story. So what have you actually found, Billy?
In a nutshell, what we found is that this MP, Mark Menzies, has received thousands of pounds of money that was donated by supporters for his campaigning expenses, and Mark has instead received it into his personal bank account and used it for his personal medical expenses.
And actually, it was just before COVID, so about 4+ years ago, that actually there were first concerns about him on this front.
Yes, exactly. So like a number of MPs and like his predecessor, the local Conservative Association has a business group, which is a vehicle essentially for supporters to donate funds which will be used for his campaigning expenses.
Why is that the case? Sorry.
Depending on how much is donated and when it's donated, it offers a way for companies in particular to donate without having to declare that they've donated directly to the Conservative Party. There are slightly different rules around the transparency of individual donors if you're giving to a business group or an unincorporated association as opposed to giving directly to a political party.
I see. And that is common practice for many MPs. That's not a controversial aspect.
Well, it's certainly not without controversy, particularly around transparency in spending in politics, but certainly there are a large number of business groups, dining clubs, unincorporated associations. They're all means of financing election campaign activities by individual MPs without necessarily having to disclose the details of everyone who's donated.
I see. But I guess the controversy over that is somewhat dwarfed by the allegations about what this MP did with money in that. When was the first instance where we think he took money out of that organisation and its accounts for allegedly his own personal use?
So this account has 2 signatories who are local Conservatives who are responsible for signing out the money for use on election expenses. About 4 years ago, shortly before the coronavirus pandemic, the MP told them he had medical bills, private medical bills that were due urgently, and he didn't have the money for it, and he wanted to borrow the money from this account. He said, if you could transfer me the money, I will cash in some shares and I'll pay the account back. And so they agreed to do that, and there were 2 transfers at around that time of £3,000 and £4,000 respectively, so a total of £7,000. He didn't in fact pay that money back, and that money has not been paid back at any point since then.
We should say a source close to Menzies disputes this account and says it was a local party member, not him, who suggested using the election fund for his medical bills. So, in the first instance, to those people who are signatory to the accounts, although it's somewhat untoward. He's promising to pay it back. And so it's the case that he's just really borrowing this money. But as you said, he never actually repaid.
And these are, you know, prominent local conservatives. They don't want problems. They don't want a reputational damage for the constituency or for the party. And so if the MP is asking them to do something, you know, they're predisposed, I suppose, to look favourably on such a request.
And then interestingly, that wasn't the last time he did that, even though he had taken that money, hadn't paid it back. Years later, November last year, at it again.
Exactly, almost a carbon copy of the first time. He again asked for, in quick succession, two sums of £3,000 and £4,000. Again, the same excuse was given of it being needed for private medical bills. One of the signatories had changed by this point, but the end result was the same. The money was again transferred from the account for his personal use and hasn't been repaid. And remember, this is money that has come from local donors who have given this money explicitly on the understanding it will be used for his campaigning. And he is instead using it for his personal expenses. Now that, if proven, amounts to possible fraud.
And do we think this money was actually being used for medical bills? Was he telling the truth, do we know, on that front to these people?
So obviously there are some privacy concerns around anything involving somebody's health and medical bills. But certainly a source close to Menzies is adamant that is what the money was used for. And they say they have evidence, although I've not seen that, of those bills.
Coming up, more details from within Billy's investigation. And what did the Conservative Party do when they were told first about these allegations? That's in a moment.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Crosswires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Romesh Ranganathan and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.
This brings us then to December last year and the call that you mentioned at the start. He telephones this 78-year-old woman from his office and, as you explained, says he needs money, says he's got him with bad people. What did she make of that? What was her reaction to him at the time?
So she, just to sort of give a bit more of the context, she is his former campaign manager, a sort of long-time, very loyal Conservative, and she is one of the two people whose signatories on that account. Her reaction when she was called in the middle of the night was to say, I'm not transferring the money. I can't transfer it from the business account. I'd have to go to a branch to do that. I can't do that at 3:15 in the morning. And he then said, well, you've got to give me the money yourself, i.e. from your own personal savings. And she said she wouldn't do that either. But she said she would speak to his secretary, his office manager, and that they'd come up with a solution. And she then had a conversation with the MP's office manager. Later that morning, that office manager ended up cashing in her own personal ISA and transferring him the money, which by that point had risen from demand of £5,000 to a demand for £6,500. And that was the sum that she gave him.
And the urgency was for what reason? Because this isn't like the previous two occasions where it's medical bills he needs to pay. I mean, you don't need to pay those at 3:15 in the morning. Why was this so urgent?
The MP told the 78-year-old in that initial phone call that it was a matter of life and death, that he was being detained against his will in a flat. And clearly the implication was if he didn't get the money, then something very bad was going to happen to him at the hands of whoever it was he owed the money to.
And thinking about this supposed hostage situation where he said he was being kept in this flat against his will and needed this money, otherwise bad things were going to happen. What do we know about what was actually happening there? I mean, was that genuinely the case?
I mean, a lot of the, exactly what happened that night involving the MP at his end is still a mystery, to be honest. A source close to the MP said that he met a man, he arranged to meet a man who he'd met on an online dating website, went to that man's flat, subsequently went to another man's flat and continued drinking there. And it was at this second address where he, in the early hours of the morning, became aware that there were multiple people there and they were demanding this sum of money, £5,000. They claimed that they were falsely claiming he'd been sick and that it was for cleaning and other expenses. But he certainly was scared of what might happen and felt he had to pay the money, but didn't have the funds to do it himself. And hence why he made the phone call and why ultimately his office manager handed over her own money. The source close to Menzies says that she did that as a friend, just wanted to help, and denied that she was coerced as an employee of his.
So he has already, 4 years ago and a month ago, taken how many thousands of pounds out of the account of his sort of re-election campaign?
So that's a total of 14,000. He then receives
And then he receives what on from this occasion?
So then he received £6,500. That's the personal money of his office manager. The £6,500 that the office manager paid ends up being reimbursed from the campaign group, the business group's accounts. So that's now a total of around £20,000 that's come out of money from donors.
He then requests even more money.
Yeah, so he then speaks again to this former 78-year-old campaign manager who's now been joined by the other signatory on the account. The other signatory responsible for signing out the money for use on election expenses, you know, they're a local Conservative supporter, and they have a conversation with Mark, and he is telling them that he has been told he needs to undertake another course of medical treatment that would cost £35,000, and they say, Mark, this has to stop. Effectively, that there is no more money that's going to be coming out of the business group of these campaign funds to meet his personal expenses. And he says, well, we can raise some more.
Do we know what any of them thought about this? Because, I mean, us listening to it sounds wild. At the time, did they think this is incredibly odd behaviour?
Yeah, I think they thought it was absolutely extraordinary. And obviously, I think it also cast a fresh light on the previous request for funds that was supposedly for his private medical bills. I think they quickly came to the conclusion that maybe it wasn't for that purpose after all.
He is, of course, a Member of Parliament, so knows that this is the kind of thing that could end up in the papers, would certainly be talked about by people. I mean, did he want some kind of silence from them?
He did behave in the following weeks in a way which appears to have been aimed at keeping those that knew about this on side. He brought a large bunch of flowers to the campaign manager on one occasion. He asked her to be his campaign manager again and was sort of flattering her. He was trying to get the other signatory more involved in preparations for the campaign. And on one occasion, he explicitly had a conversation about what would happen if the press did get wind of this and said he would deny everything.
A source close to Mark Menzies has since denied this. When did officials within the party get wind of this?
So a report was made right at the start of January this year to the Chief Whip, to the Conservative Chief Whip, to describe what had happened and to raise the concerns about it in terms of the seeming misuse of funds, and also the way in which he'd abused his position in pressuring staff to hand over their own money. That's resulted in an investigation being opened by the Conservatives. It was ultimately passed to CCHQ, the Conservative headquarters. They've received evidence relating to this. They've interviewed people involved on a number of occasions, including the MP himself. But as we sit here, 3.5 months since these allegations were first raised with them, no referral seems to have been made to the police.
Is this kind of story happening more often, or are we just more tuned to it, able to uncover it?
Just in practical terms, there have been a string of scandals now in the last few years of what might loosely be termed sleaze scandals around the conduct of MPs, whether that relates to their sexual conduct, financial
affairs, bullying, you know, misuse of position. And certainly there's been a kind of cascade of those scandals. It starts to feel a bit like the end of the last days of the John Major government when it's sort of drowning in sleaze. And I think that's one of the reasons this is going to be very difficult for the government, because it's not just the behaviour of the MP and the questions around that, but there are also clearly some very serious questions for the party to answer about how it's handled these allegations.
You've obviously put all this to Mark Menzies, the MP. What's he had to say in response?
So he has said that he strongly disputes the allegations put to him, that he's complied with the rules on declaring campaign finance rules, and he said that he can't comment further because of the ongoing investigation.
And what about the Conservative Party? He has relinquished the whip, or they've taken the whip off him. But when you put all of this story to them, something that you said, lots of this they will have already known about because they're investigating it, what have they had to say in response?
So they said last night that they were investigating allegations and it's a confidential process and they take all allegations seriously. Following the publication of the story, as you say, there was a phone call between the chief whip and Mark Menzies, and he no longer has that Conservative whip and will only regain it depending on the outcome of that Conservative Party investigation. Losing the whip means that he's no longer in the Conservative Parliamentary Party. He won't receive instructions on which way to vote, and he won't have the party apparatus behind him on all of those aspects in terms of the day-to-day business in Parliament. But he will still sit in the meantime as an independent MP. He can still take part in debates and votes, and that part of the job will continue as normal for him. He's also lost the role of the government trade envoy that he had held for a number of years. Grant Shapps, the cabinet minister doing the media rounds for the Tories, has claimed that there was new information that came to light that and the Conservatives took that step with the whip. It's not clear to me what that new information was. As far as I'm aware, everything that we reported and everything we put to them in advance of reporting it was information that they already knew and had known for some time.
We mentioned at the start, Billy, how you've reported on so many of these kind of scandals. You've broken quite a lot of these scandals, but it's amazing when you actually look down a list of the number of particularly Conservative MPs who have stepped down or lost their jobs just in this Parliament from some kind of misconduct or scandal. I mean, if that's the context, does any of this surprise you anymore?
Well, it really has been wave after wave of sleaze in the last few years of this these various Conservative administrations and ministers resigning and by-elections and all sorts of allegations of misconduct by MPs. I think in that sense, I mean, it's really feels like echoes of the end of the Major government. It's a party that's been in government for a very long time, and it's been a real exhaustion of a lot of the kind of top talent within the party, and you start to see problems like this emerge. And I think the details of this particular scandal certainly did surprise me when I first heard of them. I mean, some of the allegations are extraordinary. This late night phone call and some of the previous incidents that the MP has been embroiled in as well. It does certainly have elements that you don't see every day of the week.
Which is an understatement of the century.
Yeah, that sounds like an excessively understatement.
No, maybe. But I thought that was a nice finish. I thought that was really nice. That was senior investigations reporter at The Times, Billy Kemba. For more on his investigation into Mark Menzies, you can read the full thing online at thetimes.co.uk if you have a subscription. The producers were Olivia Case and Edward Drummond. The executive producer was Kate Ford. And sound design and theme composition was by Mao Lissetto. If you enjoyed this podcast, you might like our previous episode, The Council House Row Angela Rayner Can't Shake.
The problem is, so far, Angela Rayner has simply said, I have done nothing wrong. It is my primary residence. It was my primary residence. And I don't want to get into conversations that relate to my family because I want to protect them, which, as I say, is entirely understandable. But when you are facing questions like this, which are quite specific, you really do need to either provide the evidence that says you didn't owe capital gains, or you need to put it to bed by saying definitively, I was living there the whole time. Not using quite a careful formulation of language, I think.
There is a link to that in the description for this podcast if you fancy it. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review. It helps other people find us. And you can email us if you like. thestory@thetimes.co.uk is where you'll find us. Goodbye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for ways to win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.